Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel. First on the docket, Chad Daybell waives speedy trial. More delays. Second, Barry Morphew preliminary hearing. A couple of observations after our producer Julie went down and sat through the proceedings. Third, a judge grants a motion for a mistrial filed by Michael Avenatti. Scott Peterson, is he going to get a new trial? A political candidate in Oklahoma charged with a sex crime. A story of a hero. And then finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. Thanks for watching. As I noted the other night when we went live, we weren't able to do a show yesterday because I was still in trial. You may ask, gee, Scott, how did your trial turn out? Well, I can tell you it took a little longer than expected just because of the sheer volume of counts. That's right, 13 counts. But a jury came back within about 45 minutes, not guilty to all counts. Apparently, the jury was able to see what neither the district attorney nor the judge could see throughout these proceedings, that it was an illegal search and that my client was not guilty. He's given me permission to talk about his case. We can talk about it and talk about how, well, jury found him not guilty. We'll do that shortly. All right, let's get straight to the docket. But before we do that, want to talk about one of our sponsors. Hey, support our sponsors. Why? Because they support us. Please do this. Go to crimetalkprep.com, okay? If there's one thing that we've all realized in the world, whether it's going to be a natural disaster or some other catastrophe out there in the world, you need to be able to take care of yourself. And basically, when the natural disaster happens, or something happens, it's too late to start planning for it. You need to plan now. Now, does this make you some crazy prepper waiting for the world to end? No, it's called being a responsible adult, making sure that your family's taken care of. Remember the start of COVID? What did we see? Everybody running around to get toilet paper and you couldn't find toilet paper. What happens if there's a huge snowstorm? Everybody runs to the store. There's a hurricane coming. You go to the store. The shelves are empty. What happens when it takes a week to 10 days for the aid to come in? Well, you're on your own. You have to be able to take care of yourself. So I'm telling you, check these guys out. Go to crimetalkprep.com and take a look at this. You'll be able to get these. This is just the one of the two buckets for the four weeks supply. And take a look at all of this stuff. You've got chicken-flavored rice, Maple Grove oatmeal, another oatmeal. You're going to get thousands of calories a day here. You can take care of yourself. They've got drinks. They've got stew mixes. Everything you need, rice, calories that you're going to need, black bean soup. And I'm telling you, this stuff tastes great. Go to Crime Talk Prep. Be prepared. All right. First on the docket. Well, once again, Chad Daybell has filed through counsel a waiver of speedy trial. What does that mean? That means basically that the trial date that we were going to have in November isn't going to happen. What this means is that Chad Daybell has waived his right to a speedy trial effective as of August 18th, and therefore, the state now has until February 18th of 2022 to get him to trial. Do you really think that's going to happen? I don't. This is going to get prolonged and drug out even further since it's now a death penalty case. We'll find out shortly whether it's going to be a joint trial, if maybe Lori Vallow has been restored to competency. I wouldn't hold my breath on that just yet, but we'll have to wait and see. Next on the docket, let's talk about the Barry Morphew preliminary hearing. When we spoke last on Tuesday night, it was right after the third day of the preliminary hearing. Remember, there was a staggering of a couple of weeks in between days. And Julie, our producer, went down and observed the proceedings. We went through her notes. But I think one thing that came clear after reviewing Julie's notes, as well as talking with her, was that, well, there is no smoking gun. And although this is only a preliminary hearing, the evidence was hardly overwhelming. Now, that's what I took from it. And I don't think that Julie's going to tell me what she thinks I want to hear or don't want to hear. I just tell her to tell me the truth. But she was not impressed by neither the strength or the nature of the evidence that was being presented. Now, obviously, there was a lot of hearsay evidence presented, but the reality of it is there's nothing to really pin Barry Morphew to it. Did he do it? We don't know for sure. If anybody knows for sure, go let the police authorities know the exact time, the exact manner, so that they can narrow this down. But right now, it seems like a lot of, well, if this happened, then this could have happened, and then this could have happened. And I'm telling you, from a criminal defense perspective, you may not want to hear this, but that may get you beyond a preliminary hearing, but it's not going to get you a guilty verdict at trial. Now, a lot can change, but a lot of people thought, oh, the district attorney must be holding back some of their better evidence for trial. No, they're trying to get and prove proof evident presumption great so that Barry Morphew doesn't get a bond. Now, the judge set a hearing for September 17th to announce whether there's probable cause. Now, I'm a realist. Do I think the judge will probably find probable cause? I would have to say yes, because most judges do not throw charges out at a preliminary hearing. Why? Because the standard is so low. All the evidence must be viewed in the light most favorable to the prosecution, drawing all inferences in the prosecution's favor. I mean, talk about an advantage, right? That's like, you know, in a sports scene that every move that the team A makes is correct. It can't be questioned. And even if it's completely explainable, you still got to view it in the light most favorable to team A. So if I was a betting person, I would say the charges go forward on the preliminary hearing based upon that, but the judge will not find proof evident presumption great and set a bond in a reasonable amount of money. The judge apparently said, according to Julie, that he wants to go through his some 25 pages of notes and be able to explain the decision that the judge is going to render. Clearly, the judge wants everyone to know what he did and why. A couple of observations that I think were significant from Julie. The first thing was, at the first round of the preliminary hearing, the daughters for Barry Morphew were clearly on his side. And guess what? They are clearly still on his side. Now, Julie says that the girls were gesturing and making facial expressions and even some guffaws when evidence came out at the hearing, and were just like, whatever, which I think is interesting because you may recall it was the judge who didn't want to release the affidavit for the arrest warrant simply for the fact that the girls were young, and somehow he didn't want this information to come out until they've had a chance to review it. Well, apparently they've had a chance to review it. They've made their peace, what have you, if they even need to, with their father, and they are clearly on side team Barry. The other little interesting tidbit is, apparently, Salida, a very small town, most people believe in the local community that he probably did it. The question is, well, can they prove it? He also, like most people charged with first-degree murder and allegedly, you know, for the death of your wife, has already developed quite a fan club. At least 8 people, allegedly, have gone to the jail to see Barry and comfort him, I don't know, talk with him, whatever they're doing. Maybe they're just good friends. But that's the talk of the town. Yes, it isn't backed up. I haven't seen the jail records, but I have no reason to doubt the source of information that it's coming from. So we'll see. We'll continue to watch, and we'll have another video coming out shortly regarding all of the reasons why Barry Morphew is guilty, and maybe a little explanation as to, well, why that really doesn't mean much of anything. We'll have it out here for you shortly. All right, next on the docket, Michael Avenatti. Remember him? That's right. He was charged with embezzling nearly $10 million in settlement funds from several of his clients. Sound familiar? Oh yeah, that Girardi guy, right? Very similar type allegations. Well, Avenatti has already faced a host of his legal woes and most recently received a 2.5-year prison sentence in a separate case over his, he was found guilty of the extortion of Nike. So he was awarded a mistrial in his embezzlement case. What is a mistrial? Well, a mistrial basically says that there has been some sort of injustice and to go forward would be a greater injustice. So you get to start all over. Well, how did that come about? Well, let's talk about it. The judge granted the mistrial 6 weeks. That's right. 6 weeks into the trial where Michael Avenatti was acting as his own counsel. And the mistrial was based upon the prosecution's failure to turn over certain computerized financial documents. During the trial, Michael Avenatti's paralegal testified when she worked for him that she used the accounting program QuickBooks and Tabs to track case expenses. For over a year, Avenatti requested these detailed financial information from the prosecutors from both programs. But guess what? He did not receive the full set of the documents requested. That's what you refer to as a discovery violation. What have we talked about here several times? The prosecution has to turn over everything. They don't get to pick and choose. And the worst place to find out that the prosecution hasn't turned something over? That's right, mid-trial, 6 weeks into trial. Well, Michael Avenatti made a motion and argued for the mistrial that the government's failure to comply with these discovery demands constituted extreme prejudice, right? You need those documents if the government's relying upon them so that you can prepare. Avenatti argued that the financial data constituted exculpatory Brady material, right? We've talked about that, exculpatory, something that would reduce your potential exposure. And it comes from Brady v. Maryland, United States Supreme Court case that clearly states that the prosecution has to turn this information over. And without it, Michael Avenatti was deprived of his chance to create an overall case theory and was unable to effectively cross-examine the prosecution's financial expert. The judge, James Selma, agreed with Avenatti. The judge said Avenatti was entitled to challenge the precise amount the prosecutors alleged was misappropriated, fancy word for stolen. And after the judge's ruling, Avenatti made statements to reporters thanking his co-counsel, Dean Stewart, and Courtney Cummings Cafali. He also says that today was a great relief and it's a good day for the rule of law in America. Mr. Avenatti in custody and still making statements to the press. You gotta admire that, right? He went on to state that all eyes are not on the prosecution's taint team who was responsible for sorting through and handling over the documents in question to Mr. Avenatti. Some are calling it a huge F up by the government. Well, let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, those types of F ups don't happen by mistake. They happen because someone makes a conscious decision not to turn that over. It came out, the government got caught, and the judge spanked them. And Michael Avenatti is probably one of my least favorite people in the world because I think he gives every attorney a very bad name, but he's still entitled to a fair trial. And when the government plays games, they deserve to get caught. All right, next on the docket, Scott Peterson. Is he going to get a new trial? Scott Peterson returned to court yesterday to hear whether he will get a new trial over his 2002 murder conviction of his wife and unborn child. Now, Peterson had to attend the hearing from San Quentin State Prison via telephone, and he did little to no talking whatsoever. The question is whether he's going to get a new trial based upon juror misconduct. Now, the legal team for Scott Peterson has said his previous trial should be thrown out over a juror's alleged misconduct. Allegedly, a juror in the original trial had lied about her history of domestic abuse in order to be selected to the jury and was ultimately a juror that convicted him. That verdict came down in November of 2004, where he was found guilty of two counts of murder and placed on death row in 2005. In 2020, that sentence was reduced, taking away the death penalty and reducing it to life without parole by the California Supreme Court, who said there were significant errors in the jury selection process. Based upon that, Peterson got his death sentence vacated. Now the question is, was the alleged juror's misconduct in this particular case by not releasing that she had been the victim of a domestic abuse type of situation, something that should have been disclosed? I think that it should have been disclosed, and the judge has scheduled this matter for a 2-week hearing early next year where they're going to take testimony from the juror. That's going to be rather interesting to see what the juror says as to why she did not disclose the information. Remember, the juror also wrote a book about her experiences. You never know what a court is going to do, but the court is going to hold and schedule 2 weeks for a hearing to create a record as to whether there was misconduct by this juror that resulted in an unfair trial. If the court finds in any way that this juror was not completely candid and that she somehow had a bias or motive to try and get onto this jury panel to ultimately convict Scott Peterson, guess what? He is going to get a new trial. Now, Peterson's family hopes that he does in fact get a new trial. They believe that there is information that will actually exonerate him. According to them, Lacey was kidnapped and killed after she was a witness to a burglary at a neighbor's house. We'll see how that comes out. The biggest thing is juror misconduct. Did it actually happen? All right, next on the docket, a political candidate is charged with a sex crime. Well, heck, I thought to be a political candidate, that was almost a prerequisite. Well, an Oklahoma political candidate, Paul Tay, was arrested this week and charged with kidnapping and sexually assaulting a woman in Tulsa. Police said that the victim responded to a Craigslist ad for a job on Tay's latest gubernatorial campaign team in Oklahoma City, and that Tay, 58, picked her up for an interview since, you know, she didn't have her own car. Apparently, Paul picks her up and starts driving towards Tulsa, which confused and worried the victim. She apparently tried to get out of the car when Tay took a metal pipe and struck her in the pelvis area. Then Tay's car allegedly runs out of gas about 90 minutes later. He then locks her in the car while he panhandled for money to buy gas. Once he refilled, the woman said he drove another 30 minutes to his home in Tulsa, where he sexually assaulted the victim. The victim convinced Tay to take her to a store where she told the store employee that she was being held against her will. The store employee called 911 and Mr. Tay was arrested in the parking lot. Now, Mr. Tay is apparently quite well known in the Tulsa area and frequently running for office and, riding his bike downtown with sexually explicit signs on his bike. He's been charged with first degree rape, kidnapping, and assault with a dangerous weapon. Now, he's previously been charged with theft, disturbing the peace, and obstructing officers, outraging public decency, and a lot of other petty offenses. Now, Tay received just 286 votes in his bid for Tulsa mayor in 2020. He also lost badly in a city council race in 2018. He lost another bid in 2016, as well as another bid in 2014 for city council. He recently filed paperwork indicating his intention to run for Oklahoma governor in 2022. Well, now he certainly has the allegations of sexual assault behind him. I'm sure that is going to catapult him in the polls, regardless of whichever party he signs up for. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched, and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever, but if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship. You're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. All right, next on the docket. This story is tragic, but it also has basically a hero. Dustin Wakefield, 21, here from Colorado, down in Castle Rock, was shot and killed in a restaurant in Miami trying to protect his one-year-old son. Tamarius Blair David Jr., he's 22, of Norcross, Georgia, told investigators that, yes, he in fact did shoot Dustin Wakefield, 21, on Tuesday night because he was high on mushrooms, which made him feel empowered. This was all according to the police reports. David told police that he randomly decided to shoot Wakefield when he entered the patio area of the La Cerveceria restaurant around 6:30 p.m. The victim's uncle, Mike Wakefield, told police that this guy comes in with a gun, waving it, saying it's time to die. He then points the gun at his son, and Dustin said he's only a boy. Dustin stood up between the gunman and the baby, and he shot him. He shot him multiple times on the ground. Now, David fled the restaurant, according to police, and was captured nearby in an alley. Cell phone video obtained by some individuals nearby showed that David was lying spread eagle on his back and smiling as three officers approached him with their guns toward him, yelling various commands. Now, David is charged with murder and was being held without bond Wednesday at the Miami-Dade County Jail. And if anyone saw his court appearance, he was somewhat surprised, thinking, well, why am I not going to get a bond? And the judge had to let him know, you're accused of killing someone in cold blood. You're not getting a bond. Unbelievable. Truly a hero. And although we'll give the presumption of innocence to Mr. David, seems like a pretty open and shut case indeed. All right. Finally, today on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Police responded to a call early Saturday morning about a disturbance in an Iowa apartment building. Allegedly, Kyle Clark, 19, and another man were face-to-face yelling at each other. When he saw the police, Clark tried to walk away. Police noticed a large bulge under his shirt, like he was trying to hide something. Shocking. Police asked if this was a bag of weed, and Clark walked himself into a dead end trying to escape. As Clark was being handcuffed, a very large bag of marijuana fell from under his shirt. Clark used the best excuse of all time, and he said, quote, "That's not mine," end quote. Clark is charged with felony and misdemeanor drug counts for the 4-ounce bag of marijuana. He was booked into the Johnson County Jail and was released late Saturday morning. Now, Mr. Clark is not our dumb criminal contestant for the day because he was smoking marijuana. Frankly, I think most people think, who cares? But in this particular case, when the 4-ounce bag of marijuana falls from his shirt and says, "That's not mine," I love it. Okay, that's almost as good as "those aren't my pants" defense. Remember all the times where somebody found drugs in somebody's pants and they would say, "Those aren't my pants"? I actually had clients say, We're going with the not my pants defense. I just put on my roommate's pants. I had no idea the Schedule II controlled substance was in the pocket. Well, Mr. Clark, I don't think the that ain't mine is going to work as well as the those aren't my pants defense. So for that, Mr. Clark, you are a dumb criminal contestant of the day. Congratulations. If you would like to have the same Crime Talk gear that the dumb criminal contestant winner of the week will receive, just simply hit the link below and you can order your gear as well. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.